I have some notes from Brihad Bhagavatamritam, which was a book by Sanatan Goswami, one of the six Goswamis in Vrindavan. He's discussing something about Prahlad Maharaj, because this treatise in Brihad Bhagavatamritam, Sanatan Goswami, he asks a question, and then Narada Muni, he uses Narada Muni, and it's a story with philosophy woven into a story. And Narada Muni asks the question, which devotee of the Lord has received the most mercy of the Lord? And first he starts off with some very pious religious king, and then he goes to some Brahmin, and then the king says, no, I'm not such, I haven't received much mercy, I'm not a very good devotee. This Brahmin, this South Indian king, he's a king, but he's also a Brahmin, he's very charitable, he's received more mercy. And then Narada Muni goes there and he said, actually, I didn't receive much mercy. You know, I really got a lot of mercy is Lord Brahma. And then he went to Lord Brahma, and Brahma said, Shiva. And then Shiva said, no, I didn't get that much mercy. You should go to Prahlad. Because Prahlad, Nrisimhadeva appeared to Prahlad. And so he must be a greater devotee. Whoever got the most mercy must be the greatest devotee. So then he goes to Hanuman, Narada Muni, he says, oh Hanuman, you're so great. I mean, he goes to Prahlad, he says, you're such a great devotee. You must really gotten all the mercy of the Lord. Then Hanuman says, no, actually, I haven't gotten much mercy. Hanuman, he's got the mercy. He's better at devotee than me. Then he goes to Hanuman. Then Hanuman says, actually, I haven't had that much mercy. Actually, the Pandavas, they have much more mercy of God. God lived with them so long and this and that. And then he goes to the Pandavas, and the Pandavas say, no, actually, we haven't got that much mercy. The Yadavas in Mathura and in Dwarka, they have got, you know, Uddhava and all the Yadavas, they're much more intimate and they have much more mercy. The Vasudeva and Devaki and all these, Ugrasen and all these Yadavas. So then they go to the Yadavas, and then they say, the Yadavas say, actually, among all of us, Uddhava, he's the closest to Krishna. He's called Haridas. In the Bhagavatam, Uddhava is called Haridas. He's such a great servant. We're all serving Hari or Krishna, but he has the appellation, he has the title Haridas. So then he goes to Uddhava and he says, Uddhava, you've got the most mercy of the Lord. You're the greatest devotee. And Uddhava says, no, actually, not. It's not me, it's the Brijvasis. The Brijvasis, they're so intimate, and so friendly, and so close to the Lord. They eat food and they give it to Krishna. He takes food out of their mouth and puts it in his mouth with the coward boys, and they ride on his shoulders and he wrestles them, and he's afraid of the lightning, and he jumps into Nanda Maharaj's arms, and he can't sleep at night. If lightning and thunder go make noise, he gets scared, and he runs from his mother when she chases him with a stick, and he cries in fear and says, "Don't hit me! Don't hit me!" The Brijvasis, they're so intimate. So then Narada Muni comes to the Brijvasis, and then they finally say, no, the coward boys say, no, much more Yashoda Nanda, they have more mercy than we do. And then he goes to Yashoda Nanda, they say, no, actually the gopis. The gopis say, no, actually it's Radharani. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. So then, as they say, the buck stops there. Radharani. So Narada Muni finally understands that Radharani is the greatest devotee of Krishna, and she's received the most mercy of Krishna because she's received Krishna. She has Krishna fully under her control. And that's one of her qualities, one of her 25th qualities, Krishna Vasibhut. Krishna Vasibhut. Vasibhut means that she controls Krishna. Prem Vasibhut. She controls Krishna by her love. That is the most powerful controlling force in the whole universe. There's nothing more powerful and controlling than love. So this principle most everyone can understand, even from our limited experience and limited world and limited brains. There's nothing more powerful than the force of love. Radharani's love is unexcelled, matchless love. Completely selfless. There's absolute dedication to the utmost in Radharani. So therefore her love is the greatest, and that love is what controls Krishna to the greatest extent. Krishna even says that Radharani is my guru, she's my prem guru, and I am like a dancer, and she's like, I am dancing to the teacher. Radharani, he says, Nach. He says, I am dancing, Radharani is my teacher, and I'm dancing. So we have some notes here about Prahlad and Hanuman. So there's some section here about Hanuman. How did Hanuman get so powerful? How did he have so many talents? Because actually he was so talented. Hanuman was so talented and powerful because he received boons from the demigods, blessings from the demigods. One day when Hanuman was young, the sun was shining, rising sun was coming. When the sun rises, it's usually pink in color, yellowy, orangey pink. And Hanuman thought that it was a tasty fruit. As it was rising, he saw it was a very tall tree, and the sun was inside the tree, shining through the tree. And Hanuman thought there was some shiny red fruit in the tree. So he jumped up in that tree, like monkeys are always jumping in trees. He jumped in the tree and he opened his mouth just to swallow that fruit. Usually we take a bite out of it, but monkeys are a little wild, so he didn't want to take one bite, he wanted to swallow the whole thing at once. So he jumped up and swallowed the sun planet. That was when he was a baby monkey. And usually the sun, when it's at the time of eclipse, it's either Rahu on one side or another side, you know. So the sun planet was a little bit, you know, he was thinking, what is this? Hanuman's another Rahu. So the demigods approached Indra and they said, who's this guy that is enjoying the sun? What happened? Because Indra is supposed to be the administrator of the universe. So everybody went to Indra and said, look, who is this monkey who just swallowed the sun planet? It's getting a little cold over here. The universe is getting a little cold. And then Indra was, so who is it? What is this stupid monkey? So then Indra took his vajra, his thunderbolt, and he threw it at Hanuman. It hit him in the jaw. Right? And then because he had swallowed the sun, so when he hit him in the jaw, ha, and then out came the sun. So this word Hanuman, means chin. Hanuman means chin. So Hanuman fell down on the rock. He fell down on the rock and he broke his chin. Now, who is the father of Hanuman? The father of Hanuman is the wind god, Vayu. So if you do something to my son, if you knock my son if you punch my son in the face, then I won't be too happy. Right? I may give you a slap or two also, isn't it? So then Vayu, he decided, okay, you knocked out my son. You hit my Hanuman on the chin. So Vayu withdrew all the air in the universe. He withdrew all the prana from the whole universe, and all the demigods were dying. No breath, no prana. So all the demigods approached Lord Brahma, and they said, listen, please give us some oxygen machines. We need a few oxygen machines, because Vayu has taken all the oxygen. Can you help us out? So then Brahma approached Vayu and said, listen, please give back the air so the demigods can keep alive. So then out of gratitude, all the demigods approached Hanuman and they granted him all kinds of benedictions. Because first he swallowed the sun, then his father swallowed all the air. So they thought, we better be nice to this monkey. Better be nice to this guy. He may grow up and become the prime minister. You know, when someone's a small minister, if you're nice to them, when they grow up and then they become a big minister, then they remember you, right? So they gave him the benediction that Hanuman could fly in the sky. Hanuman could become invisible. He could become bigger than the biggest or smaller than the smallest. And Hanuman got the blessings. He would never sleep. He'd be free from sleep. So this is a good, we can pray to Hanuman before Bhagavatam class. So Hanuman also got the blessing that he could eat nothing and have all mystic powers. He didn't need to eat, he didn't have to eat. They're all given so he could later use these in the service of Ram. When Narada Muni met Prahlad Maharaj, Narada Muni said, Prahlad, you're a very great devotee of the Lord. You really receive the mercy of the Lord. Because Bhagavan himself came to protect you, and the Sringadev came to protect you. And you're so fortunate. How many people can say that God appeared in my living room out of a pillar? You have a pillar in your living room, a kumbha, and God, see that crack in that pillar? That's where the Sringadev came out the other day. Wow, that's amazing. You're a lucky guy, and the Sringadev appeared in your house. So that's pretty unusual. Narada Muni was discussing with him, and then Prahlad said, actually, you say I got the mercy, but what is this mercy? I never had an opportunity to render any direct service to the Lord without any obstacles. Prahlad never did any direct seva. The situation that Prahlad was in was rather abnormal. When Lord Nrisingadev appeared, there was no opportunity for Prahlad to do any service. Nrisingadev was he's just devouring Hiranyakashipu and all of his demoniac relatives and servants, and everyone's just standing back. How do you serve a hurricane? If there's a hurricane or a tufan, and cyclone winds blowing. Okay, go out and serve the cyclone. Get anywhere near the cyclone, you get blown away in the sky 1,000 miles away. You can't serve a tufan. Tufan seva. Or there's a fire. The World Trade Center is on fire. Oh, I think I'll go serve the fire. What can you do? You can't do it. You can't even... The firemen couldn't get anywhere near it to put out the fire. The heat was so intense, it was like 800,000 meters away. You'd burn up if you got near the building. They couldn't even get close enough to throw any fire hose on it. Do you know that? The heat was so intense. Even they had suits on. They had some suits. They just stood at a distance and watched. Okay, there it goes. Meltdown. So this is, you imagine how fiery Nrisingadev was when he appeared from the pillar. It's called Ugra. Ugra Nrisinga. Very fierce Nrisinga. Ready to devour the universe with his flames and fire and fury of his anger. What could Prahlad do? What could a five-year-old boy do? Bring a bucket of water. Oh, cool down. Oh, cool down, man. Hey, cool down, big cat. Hey, big cat, cool down. He's a big cat. Sometimes if a husband gets angry, then the wife says, cool down, cool down. And he's yelling and this and that. Prahlad Maharaj, he can say, he's a five-year-old kid, cool down. So there's no chance for direct service. So when Narada Muni, he said, Prahlad said very humbly, he said, listen, I'm not a very great devotee. I haven't really received much mercy from the Lord. But look at Hanuman. You should meet Hanuman. Then you understand who has really got the mercy of the Lord. Hanuman has done so much direct service to the Lord. He has got to serve him directly. Hanuman was living physically with the Lord from anywhere from 11,000 to 13,000 years in Ayodhya. After they came back from Lanka and he retrieved Sita, then Lord Ram, he ruled Ayodhya for 13,000 years, and Hanuman was there every day serving, fanning and doing so many services. So the point that we can learn from this is that it's a great opportunity, it's a great fortune to do service. To have an opportunity to serve the Lord or serve the Lord's devotees. It's a great opportunity. Even Prahlad Maharaj didn't get that opportunity. So there must be some qualification, must be some seva adhikar, some qualification required to do service. Not anyone can do service. But Hanuman, he has all the good qualities. He has all the qualities of a devotee. He has all the good qualities that Krishna will want to take service from him. So this is a devotee. A devotee has all the qualities within him that Krishna will appreciate and want to take service. So what is the meaning of seva? Seva means to please the Lord. Without asking anything in return. This is real seva. The difference between seva and work. A machine will only work but not do seva. So what does seva mean? Seva means that service means with a feeling for the person. This is actually seva. We're doing something with a feeling of love for the person that we're doing that for. And seva, Krishna seva. There's a big difference between karma and seva. Karma is just duty, actions, dictated by our position, or dictated by our duty, or dictated by the society that we're surrounded by, or dictated by the Dharma Shastras. These are duties, karmas. But seva is service is done with a mood of love for the person you're serving. That's why we say Krishna seva. It's not Krishna karma, it's seva, Krishna seva. Hanuman was doing seva. He was a sevak, Ram sevak. This term is there, you must have heard a million times. Ram sevak. Sevaka, sevaka, sevak. One who does seva. Means he serves someone with a mood of love, with a mood and a desire to please that person. No business, no benefit, no percentage, no return, no commission. I'm serving, but I'm a commission agent. I am giving you a ride. I'm arranging for this tour for you, but I'm taking my 15% commission because I'm your travel agent. I'm not just doing this. This is not seva. This is business. Oh, you made all these nice arrangements for yes, yes. You take this flight and this tax and this that. Okay, give me my 10,000 rupees. That's not seva. That's business. Qualification is serve the Lord. So the topmost seva, the devotee does not depend on the Lord at all. The Brijvasis, and Madhurya Bhav, the Rajagopis, they never take any seva from Krishna. If we compare the queens of Dwarka with the gopis of Vrindavan, there's two types of bhava here. The bhava of the queens of Dwarka is called Swakya. Swakya, Swakya, belonging to me, Swakya Bhav. Rukmini belongs to Dwarkadish. Dwarkadish belongs to Rukmini. This is lawful marriage. But the love of the Brajagopis of Krishna is called para, parakya. Parakya means belonging to another. And gopis are married to some other gopa. Chandravali is married to Govardhan Mala. Radharani is married to Abhimanyu, Ayan Ghosh, as they say in Bengal, Ayan Ghosh. Abhimanyu. They have different husbands. But their relationship, their pure love with Krishna is called parakya. It's paramour, paramour love. Beyond the law, beyond the norm, beyond the... And if you see in Swakya, Bhav, in Swakya relationship, the wife depends on the husband. The husband maintains her. The queens of Dwarka are being maintained by Krishna. He's buying, he's feeding them, he's maintaining them. But Krishna's not maintaining the gopis of Vrindavan. So that's why we say the gopis seva is topmost. They are the topmost sevaks. Their love is the greatest. And that's the qualification for the topmost sevak. The topmost sevak, he doesn't want anything. Okay, I'm serving in my guru's ashram as long as he's feeding me. He stops feeding me, then I'm out of here. Well, what if he says one day, I can't feed you anymore. Will you still serve me? Well, yeah, that's fine. I don't care. As long as I have opportunity to do service, I'll stay here. I'm not staying here to eat. I'm staying here purely to serve Parthasarathi and Gauranitaya and Sitaram and do Guru Seva. I'm not here for my own belly. I'm not here for my waistline. I'm not here for my swad, my tongue. But this is a very interesting point. The topmost seva, the devotee does not depend on the Lord at all. The gopis of Vrindavan, they don't take any seva from Krishna. The gopis maintain themselves. They only serve and love Krishna. They don't take anything from Krishna. Take nothing. No food, no money, no bangles, no trinkets. Sometimes Krishna strings a mala for them. Out of his own love for Radharani, he sits down and makes a kadamba garland or mogra garland. And he gives it to Radharani. Sometimes he does Shrinkar Seva and brushes Radharani's hair and puts flowers in her hair. That's his pleasure, that's his happiness, to serve his devotees. Now this is, now we can measure our level of Seva with the gopis. How conditional, our service is so conditional. So dependent on reciprocation. So another quality of Hanuman that he's always listening to Ramachandra's pastimes. Wherever pastimes of Ram are being recited, if there's 100 places where Ramayana is being recited, Hanuman will expand himself into 100 forms to go hear that Ram Katha. You were talking about Brindadevi being a Tulsi plant. So that's two forms. One as a gopi, Brinda, and one as a tree or a plant. So Hanuman, he can expand himself to 100 Hanumans, 100 forms. Even he can have different forms. Sometimes Hanuman can be human, but here he expanded himself. So it's told that when Tulsidas, who wrote the Ramcharitamanas, Sant Tulsidas, you must have heard, he lived about 500 years ago. It's said that when he would chant the Ramayana, Hanuman would come and sit down and listen. And Tulsidas, he realized this one day. Then he asked Hanuman, he said, Tulsidas, son Tulsidas asked Hanuman, he said, can you please give me a boon? Can you bless me that I can have darshan of Ram? So then, by the mercy of Hanuman, who was sitting in that Ramayana Katha, then Ramachandra and Lakshman came. They came as two princes, with bows and arrows, and they're riding on a horse. And they came riding up, but Sant Tulsidas didn't recognize. They came up; they were just young, and they came up and they rode away. They came up and they said, "Hello, Tulsidas, or how are you? This that." And he said, "This nice." And then they rode away. Then afterwards. Then when he was doing his bhajan, his meditation, he realized, oh, this was Lakshman and Ram. So the Braja Gopis, there's a defect that Sanatana Goswami mentions in the seva of Hanuman. And Hanuman, he was serving Ramchandra, but he also wanted some seva sukh. He wanted some happiness from his seva. He wanted to derive some happiness from serving the Lord. So this is some limitation. But in Braj Bhakti, or the gopis, it's different because they're rendering service only to make Krishna happy. They don't have a drop of personal desire in Braj Gopis. It's very hard to conceive because we're so much me-centered and all of our calculations that we do with our mind, we're always thinking how to give myself pleasure. What will make me happy? I'm hot, oh, let me become cold. I'm cold, let me become hot. I'm hungry, let me eat. Oh, I want new clothes, I want this, that. I want, I want, I want, I want, I want, I want, I want. Me, 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 me. And then if we're slightly broad-hearted, we think me and my wife. I want, I want, I want, and then, oh, by the way, do you want something? Oh, you're asking me also? Yes, you can have something, little. Me, everything, you something. And then you may expand your circle of concern to your children also. Me, 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 oh, daughter, you want something? Yeah, I want a new bicycle. Okay. But the gopis, they never, I want never enters the calculation. There's two categories of desire. There's material desire and spiritual desire. So material desire is desires and activities that are related to our material body and senses, me. And spiritual desires are desires that are related to God, His devotees, and the Atma, the spiritual aspect of ourselves. The desires related to the soul, the Atma, desires related to God and devotees. It's a different category of desires, spiritual desires. You may have, for example, you have one desire. I just want to please my husband. A wife may have that desire. And then that desire will express itself through so many different activities, so many ways she will please her husband. Husband will say, can you do this, can you do that? And she'll do any number of services, any number of sevas, because this is her basic mindset. Her basic position of her heart is one position. I want to please my husband, right? And then she'll do so many unlimited, any kind of unlimited things, physical, emotional, anything to please the husband. So in the same way, the devotee of the Lord, he only has one desire, to please Krishna. And whatever that takes, that one desire will express itself through unlimited numbers of services. So this is all spiritual. All those services related to that one spiritual desire are all spiritual. Just like the one desire to please the husband and everything she does, it's all related. I'm cleaning to please the husband. I'm cooking to please the husband. I'm dressing to please the husband. I'm speaking to please everything, ideally, we could say. When a devotee desires to please Krishna's devotees, or to serve Krishna's devotees nicely so that Krishna will be happy. Devotees will be happy, therefore Krishna will be happy. And if Krishna is happy, then Krishna will bless me. What will he bless me with? A new car? Or more money? Or it's up to him. But the real thing, he'll bless us with more devotion, more desire to serve his devotees, and more desire to serve him. And moreover, he'll purify anything that's not spiritual, he'll take out of our mind. Anything that's not transcendental, he'll take away. And increase all the good qualities within us. And with those good qualities, we can perceive the Lord and serve Him even better, in a better way, in a deeper way, in a more continuous way, as we become more purified and more qualified. He gives us the purity, and He gives us the qualities, and with that acquirement, with that increase in purity and increase in qualities, we use that increase of qualities and purity to serve Him more, and to serve Him better. In the material world, if you get some boon or benediction or some promotion or perks, get a raise, get more money, then you take that money or that increase of wage to have more fun and more material enjoyment and more, buy more material objects and do more, have more sense gratification and become more covered and more forgetful and more removed from God. So gifts of Krishna bring us to Krishna. Gifts of Maya take us away from Krishna and keep us covered. An illusion, forgetfulness. Desire to please the devotees is a spiritual desire. Desire to please Krishna is a spiritual desire, which is welcome, which is desirable. we should desire that desire. That means that our mind is becoming somewhat purified. That our intelligence is telling us this is a good thing, to please Krishna's devotees. Practically, it's the topmost seva. It's called Vaishnav Seva. Vrindavan Das Thakur goes so far to say that these things are a triumvirate, three very powerful things. Vaishnav Seva, Jiva Doya, Nam Ruchi. That if we serve the Vaishnavas and we show compassion and kindness to the living entities, all living entities, then the Lord will be happy. Because the Lord is in the heart of the Vaishnavas, and the Lord is in the heart of every jiva. And if we're kind and compassionate to all the jivas and to all the devotees, then the Lord will be happy. And if the Lord is happy, he gives us ruchi, hari ruchi, nam ruchi. Nam is hari, hari nam ruchi. We get taste for the holy name. The name becomes tasty. We experience something extraordinary when we chant the holy name of Krishna. If it has a background of, if it has a backing, everything has to have a backing to it. A background of seva and compassion and kindness for all living entities. We serve the Vaishnavas and squash the mosquito. We serve the Vaishnavas and kill the mosquito. This is called hinsa, murder. Or we wear leather belts, kill cows and wear leather belts, or silk for that matter. Ladies wear so much silk. There's two kinds of silk. It's called hinsa silk and ahimsa silk. Ahimsa, Ahimsa silk is called mudka, mudka. And it appears, what it looks like, it's rather coarse. It's kind of rough, like that one chador I wear sometimes in the winter. I usually have some. That's called mudka. It's kind of rough threads and kind of coarse. And it's not very fine, sour kameez standard, sari standard silk. Now let's look a little deeper. Why they call it hinsa and ahinsa? There's a little worm called silkworm, and he has what is called metamorphosis. Metamorph means body. Changing body. He changes his body. He starts off as a worm, he ends up as a butterfly. A moth. It's a fat butterfly is a moth. Something like that. M-O-T-H, moth. So he, this little silkworm, he crawls up in a tree and he makes a house. He spins a house out of his backside or something like a spider, and he makes a nest, a little cocoon. It's called cocoon. Silkworm's cocoon, like a house. And he makes it out of thread that comes from his body, some kind of like spider web. Like, yeah, the threads. So he makes his whole house, and then he lives there. And he has his family, whatever, this and that. Then finally, he goes into hibernation inside that house, and he sleeps. And then while he's sleeping, then gradually he's changing his form. Wings start coming, and then he comes out of there as a butterfly, and he flies off. And then he leaves his house. So now his house is empty. Cocoon is empty. No one's there. Wife is gone. She's gone home to her mother or something, and the kids are married. And then Mr. Silk is taking sannyas. Mr. Silkworm he's become a butterfly. He's got his wings. He's out of there. He's liberated. He flew away. So the house is just an empty shell, and everybody moved out. So now that because he's no longer maintaining it or living there, they go along and they snatch the silk wallas. Cloth production. They snatch all those off the tree, then they put them in boiling water, and then they make, it's a process how they make the thread, silk. And they sew dhotis for puja and chadars for puja, whatever, and it's called mudgar himsa silk, non-violent silk. But it's kind of rough because it's old house is usually not is looking as good as a new house. Or like old body is not as soft as a baby. Your skin is all tough, like your baby skin is like butter. So the old cocoon of the silkworm is rather rough because it's not being maintained and it gets dried out by the air and the sun and everything. So the threads are kind of dry and not very fine. The other kind of silk, which is, I mean, that's ahimsa silk. The ahimsa silk, the murdering silk or the killing silk is the worm. Mr. Silk is still there with Mrs. Silk and baby silk and little babies, you know, whatever is inside their house over there. They're all in their little house, living there together, watching TV and whatever they do over there. And then the guy comes along and says, oh, that's a fresh one, because they have a little different color also. And then he snatches that, and he takes it and throws it in the boiling water and kills the silk worm and burns him up. He burns up, he gets murdered, basically, or just killed, dies, in the production of silk. So someone can be a so-called good Hindu, pure vegetarian, goes to Shiva temple every Monday and Janmashtami every once a year at the Krishna temple and gives donations every year to ISKCON. But they wear silk saris, but they're not very full circle in their consciousness. Their consciousness is not so broad. So there is some lacking in Jivadoya. Jivadoya Vaishnav Seva Namruchi. So Namruchi may not be coming because of Jivadoya, because the line is being traced out for sense gratification, not for seva. So when the line is there for sense gratification, then we'd rather have silk than satin. Satin is like imitation silk, I suppose. Because we want to wear natural fibers. Admittedly, they're healthier, but there's no karma in satin. You don't have to become a silkworm for wearing satin. So there's no guru's order that this is seva. The guru is telling, yes, you wear silk saris. So we're not really under the order of the guru to wear silk saris. That's our choice for our sense gratification. It's a strict point, but everything has to be adjusted. If you take from this world, like you go, you borrow some money from the bank, you have to pay back. If you don't pay back, they come and arrest you. We take a loan from nature. If you take a loan, nature is like a bank. You take a loan from nature, then you have to pay it back. You're taking, then you have to give. This is Bible, what they speak of the Vedic Shastras. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. As you sow, so shall ye reap. You like silk dresses, silk this, that, the other thing? Okay, fine. Then become silkworm. Haribo. No problem. You take for your pleasure, then they will take from you for their pleasure. They will become human and they'll wear you. They'll wear you. They'll murder you to wear your thread, wear your silk. These are the fine points of consciousness. When our consciousness expands, then it takes in the universe. But when our consciousness is very contracted, it's called Shankula, Shankula Chitta, very contracted consciousness, then our consciousness only takes in the diameter of our head. Our consciousness only expands to the extent of our head size. What is your head size? Size 7. So your consciousness is 7 inches broad. It's as big as your diameter of your cranial sphere. But as we connect with God, who is infinite, the infinite reality, then our consciousness takes on infinite proportions. Because the infinite includes everything finite within it. So when God enters our consciousness, then everything can become, it becomes all inclusive. No one is excluded from our consciousness. And no thing is excluded from our consciousness because God is residing in our consciousness. And everything is within God and God is within everything. God is the beginning and middle and end of everything. We see everything connected with God. Krishna says in Gita chapter 6 verse 30, Yomam Pashati Sarvatra Sarvam Chai Sarvam Mayi Pashati. One who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I never lost to him, he is never lost to me. So it's a bond of love. If you're in love with someone, you're inseparable. You can never be lost. Someone you love, you can never be lost to. And you can never lose the one you love. Because they'll reside in your heart, reside in your mind. Even physically you're separated due to circumstance. He's working in Europe and you're in India or whatever. But because love is there, then the vision is there, the feeling is there, the memory is there, the person is there. So this is seeing Krishna everywhere. We have this phrase, simple living, high thinking. It's a very, actually very deep concept. Simple living, high thinking. Simple living means, simple living means only living for the pleasure of Krishna. Or simply living for the pleasure of Krishna. Simple living. Simply living, or simply or only living for the pleasure and satisfaction of Krishna. High thinking, because that's the proof that we have the highest thought. When our thinking, because now our thinking is low. What is low thinking? Low thinking means me. Thinking of me means low thinking. This is low level thinking, thinking of me. Thinking of my body, that's low level thinking. Thinking of my mind, that's low level thinking. Then thinking of my wife, that's a little higher thinking, at least someone beyond yourself. And thinking of my friend, yeah, going in the right direction. But simple living, high thinking, the highest thinking is thinking of God. And when you think of God, when you think of God completely and only and absolutely, then you have simple living, high thinking. You simply live for God's pleasure.